Live Creative Now, episode 34.
Welcome to Live Creative Now with Melissa Dinwiddie, a weekly podcast to inspire you to create your art and share your work, because that's how you will change the world.
Hey, brilliant. This is Live Creative Now, the podcast designed to help you live a full color life. Whether you think of yourself as not artistic, not creative, or you think of yourself as an artist of any kind, or anything in between, the truth is that no matter how you define yourself, feeding your creative hungers makes you feel more alive. And it's how you change the world. I am Melissa Dinwiddie, passion pluralite artist, happiness catalyst, and creativity instigator, here to address all your questions about living a full color creative life. Today, I want to take a little trip in the Wayback Machine, back to the year I turned 23. We are talking 26 years ago. Oh, that's scary. I was teaching at a nursery school in the Berkeley Hills that year in California, and I had recently graduated from college from UC Berkeley, and I was kind of flailing about. I was really unsure what I wanted to do with my life. I had been a very serious dancer, and I had auditioned and got into Juilliard in New York when I was 19, but then very quickly that year I developed a vicious case of tendonitis in my ankles, which forced me to quit dancing right around the time I turned 20. Now, it took me about 5 years being on the quest for the miracle cure to finally give that up completely, but this was just an indescribably huge loss for me because not only was dance my passion, but at the time it was my only real creative outlet. And in fact, at that time of my life, I truly believed that I was not creative. I know that may seem hard to believe now if you know me as a passion pluralite artist and all of that, but at that time, I truly believed that. I had completely quit making art at 13 because other people were so much better at drawing than I was. So I wove a story that they were the artists and I wasn't. I did a few sketches in a sketchbook over the years, maybe, I don't know, five or something over the next 15 years, but I totally quit. And the same thing happened with music just a couple of years later. Other people were so much better at their instruments than I was. So I wove this story that they were the musicians and I wasn't, so I quit. And in my 20s, that year that I was teaching nursery school and around that time, I remember my best friend, Amy, would send me greeting cards in the mail. This is, you know, way before the internet, and we would send each other cards periodically. And she would draw little stars and hearts and spirals on the envelope and write little notes and things. And next to her signature inside the card, she would add these little doodly things. And I can so clearly remember thinking to myself, wow, Amy is so creative. It didn't even occur to me that I could doodle on envelopes too. And that, you know, it really wasn't that big of a deal. And I remember Amy saying, like, it's not that big of a deal, Mel. But to me, I was so locked in this story that I was not creative that it just, I don't know, it just didn't seem possible. Or if it did seem possible, I totally discounted it as, you know, copying. So this entire genre of creative expression, of doodling on an envelope with a card that I'm sending to somebody, I just cut it out of the realm of possibility because that was Amy's thing. It wasn't my thing, right? I mean, so ridiculous. But my stuckness was real, and it was painful. Stephen Pressfield, who wrote the book The War of Art, which I really love. It's got a lot of masculine war metaphors and imagery, which I'm not so keen on, but it's a really brilliant little book. And he writes that when you give into resistance, when you don't do your art, you don't do your creative thing, you end up living a life of low-grade misery. That was my life. So much of what now gives me joy, and what had previously given me joy when I was a child, painting and singing and playing instruments and writing, basically creative expression in general, so much of that felt completely cut off from me. Now, of course, now, with the benefit of hindsight, I know that I wasn't ever truly cut off at all. But I had bought into this story that said that I wasn't creative. And that meant that I didn't get to do those things. And this went on for 15 years. It went on from age 13 to age 28. That is when I finally started mucking around with arts and crafts again. And it was like a dam burst. And my poor little malnourished creative spirit, who I'd locked up in a closet, was finally free. But back at age 23, the year that I taught nursery school, I was still 5 years away from that. So what did I do? Well, here's the thing. Your creativity, it doesn't go away. It has to find its way out. So it will find a way out. And it will find a way that's productive if it can. And if there's no opportunity for it to find a productive way out, it will find a not productive way out. So what I remember doing is a lot of shopping. That was how I tried to fill the void that was left when I locked my creative spirit up in a closet. Now, I have to say that this didn't always mean actually buying things. And in fact, most of the time I didn't buy anything at all, because remember, I was living on a nursery school teacher's wages, and nursery school teachers do not get paid very much. And it was a part-time nursery school teacher's wages. So I didn't have the disposable income to buy a lot of the things that I spent my time shopping for, but I still did a lot of shopping, especially when I felt down or depressed. I mean, that was my tactic to deal with feeling down, to deal with depression. I would go to Nordstrom or Macy's or Neiman Marcus. I would go straight to the evening wear department and I would try on evening gowns. Now realize, I had no place to wear an evening gown. I had no occasion to wear an evening gown. And there was no place or occasion that was on the horizon. I mean, this was pure escapism. If I had had the chutzpah, I probably would have gone and tried on wedding dresses, you know, just to wear a frilly, fancy, beautiful something to escape into this fantasy idea of what I wanted my life to be like and what it totally wasn't like. The other thing I remember doing was, there was this period where I went to a lot of antique stores. It was definitely during that year when I was teaching nursery school. I was on this like really obsessive, ridiculous quest to find a framed stained glass window that I could hang on the wall in front of a window. Now, I lived at the time in a rented room in somebody else's house. I had no place to hang a framed stained glass window. Why was I on an obsessive quest for a framed stained glass window? Well, I think somebody that I knew, and I cannot for the life of me remember who, but somebody owned a stained glass window that hung in front of a window in their home. And I just remember, I don't remember the person, I don't remember the house, but I remember being so impressed with it and with the creative aesthetic that this person had to hang such a thing in their home. And I don't remember the house, but I know that it was a charming house. It was not the Bauhaus 1970s style room with an aluminum frame 1970s window that I lived in, right? I mean, hanging a stained glass window in front of that window would not have done a whole lot to make that room more charming. But I think that the idea of owning a stained glass window, it represented something that I desperately wanted. It represented a home of my own. It represented that charming home that the person who I can't remember had, and the kind of life that person had, which I wanted. I don't know who they were, and I don't know what their life was, but it seemed so much more full color than my own. They clearly had an aesthetic sense that I really responded to, and that window represented that to me, as if I could own that aesthetic sense, if I would just own the window, as if I could finally reclaim creativity. Like, the only way that I could have creativity in my life was to buy it. Wow. So sad. And since I didn't think at the time that I was a creative person, I mean, this makes sense. The closest that I could come to inhabiting a creative life was to purchase the outward trappings of a creative life, if that makes sense. So I shopped a lot. And that gave me a momentary escape. But it also only highlighted the low-grade misery that was my life, because, of course, you know, I could live in that little fantasy world for a few moments while I was trying on evening gowns or in the antique store looking for stained glass windows. But then I'd come back to my 1970s Bauhaus room with the aluminum frame windows and my very non-creative, boring life as a part-time nursery school teacher. Not that there's anything wrong with being a part-time nursery school teacher. It just wasn't my passion. Now, the good news is that, of course, I finally did come back to my creative birthright. I was around age 28, and that was the year that I dove into art and arts and crafts. I took a creative writing class, and I took classes in paintings and ceramics and calligraphy, and you name it, I took it. And life very quickly went from black, white, and gray to blazing, rich, full color. And I would love to be able to tell you that I lived happily ever after, but that would not be the truth. The sad truth is that after I finally rediscovered my creativity, my inborn creativity, because it's inborn for all of us, and after I finally rediscovered my inborn entitlement to create, which is also something that's inborn with all of us, I lost it again. And the way I lost it sounds so weird because I lost it by following my passion and starting a little business selling my art. Mostly private commissions involving calligraphy at the time, and I did a lot of ketubot over the years. A ketubah is a Jewish marriage contract, and ketubot is the plural. It's a Hebrew word. And the pressure of having to wring every possible penny from my creative expression, of putting the pressure on my creativity to earn my living, and the pressure also of really high expectations for my artistic potential from all the people who told me how talented I was and all that crap. All of that choked me right up. Can you say perfectionist paralysis? I was the poster child. I was able to create for my clients, so I did create on demand. I created for them. But I stopped making art for me. I completely locked my creative spirit up in a closet once again. After finally freeing her up, I locked her up again. And it really wasn't until 2010 and 2011 that I finally broke the lock on that closet for good. I finally had the maturity and the experience to understand that all of my self-doubt, all of my fears and my comparisonitis, all of that was not ever going to fully go away. So my job was to learn to manage it. And that's really the quest that I've been on for the past 5 or 6 years. And I had the wisdom, thank God, to know that everything would go a lot better if I didn't have to do it alone. Oh my God, creative community has been essential. I mean, that's part of why I do this podcast, because I want to grow a community of creatives, a creative uprising, changing the conversation around creative expression and play. It would be almost impossible to single-handedly fend off all the cultural messages, the cultural lies about creative expression and play. The lie that it's self-indulgent and frivolous, the lie that it's only for the elite few and nobody else gets to do it, the lie that if you're not making money from it, it's a waste of time, and that artists are writers and, you know, creative people of all types are flaky and suicidal and crazy and all of the rest. It would be so hard to do it alone, because those cultural messages are so strong. That is one of the reasons why in the programs that I run now as a creativity instigator, I always have a community element. We need that community. And that's why I decided to create an ongoing community, my Creative Sandbox community, which I just opened to annual members for 2016. I started it as a pilot program back in August because I wanted to test out with a smaller group, A, whether an ongoing community would be something that my audience, my customers, my right people would really want, and B, whether an ongoing community would nourish me or whether it would suck me dry. I really didn't know. So I ran a pilot program, and that experiment has been a fabulous success. I absolutely loved it. And so I'm continuing, and I've got all sorts of things planned for 2016, including new art project tutorials every month, which is sort of like art for non-artists and for artists too. So art for everybody. Monthly art share gatherings to show and tell and get critiques, get helpful feedback on your work from other really generous, warm, loving, thoughtful, supportive, encouraging creative women. We're also doing live conversations with guest teachers and leaders who will join me in a video conference platform for a conversation, and members can join in as well and ask questions. I'm really excited about that. And we're doing monthly studio work days where we meet up in real time to get stuff done together. It's so much easier to get down to work when you know that other people are doing it right next to you, even if they're 3,000 miles away. And we're also doing round robin projects where groups of people collaborate to make a real artist book or an art journal or other art project together. And so one person starts and then mails it off to the next person, and they add something to it, and they mail it to the next person, and they add something to it, and it ends up turning into something, a total wonderful, wonderful treasure surprise at the end. And then plus we do live calls with me twice a month, and there's an archive of recorded interviews with creatives of all stripes, and weekly creative prompts in your inbox, and more. There's a bunch more. So, and perhaps the most important piece of all, I can't forget this, our private Facebook group, where we share our wins and our challenges, and we give each other feedback, and we cheer each other on and boost each other up. It's an amazing group. We really have each other's back. I'm so grateful for it. Just today, I held one of the twice monthly rally calls for Creative Sandbox members, and other people were saying how grateful they are to have this group. When things get just insanely hard, you know, like people are dealing with deaths in the family and home repairs totally out of control and drama with children and, you know, just regular day-to-day craziness, holidays coming up. The Creative Sandbox community is a sanctuary. It really helps keep us going. We model for each other too. We model creative play. We model courage. We model compassion and kindness and self-forgiveness. And that spreads. When you see other people doing that, it makes it easier to do it yourself. And then you model for other people. It's really a wonderful, virtuous circle. So if that sounds like something you'd be interested in joining, just go to creativesandboxcommunity.com to read more and join up. The first 20 annual members who join in 2015, you know, before January 1st, get a very special prize. And the first 10 annual members also get a fast action bonus, a one-on-one consulting session with me. Last I checked, there were two of those fast action memberships left. So you might want to jump on that fast if you're interested. So head on over to creativesandboxcommunity.com right now. And I really look forward to seeing you inside the sandbox and seeing what we create together in 2016. So that's it. That's a wrap. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you're getting value out of this podcast, the best way to thank me is to tell your friends and go over to iTunes and leave a 5-star rating and review. Those make such a big difference in how the show is ranked and helping other people find it. And that helps grow the creative uprising. And I don't know about you, but I want as many people who are in alignment with this idea that creative expression and play are important and essential, that we need to get creating. I want more people to feel that way and to believe that alongside me. So you can play an important role in this movement simply by leaving a review. Pretty easy. Plus, I would be super duper grateful. Thanks again for joining me. And until next time, go get creating. Mwah! Live creative now. Subscribe at livecreativenow.com.